Yeah. It's dead in this town. You know?
It's crazy.
Gotta shake things up.
Hey guys, welcome to another episode of Double A. This is your favorite podcasters, Amber and Aryan. If you guys are new here, because you know it's 2021. If you guys are new here, we try to do a podcast every Thursday. We try. Sometimes life happens and sometimes we're not here. And then sometimes we do Sundays if we have something to do and we're not busy. But if you guys miss us, we do have our links on our podcast. So you guys can go check them out on YouTube, Facebook. Go and check those out and catch up. So we're going to start with Amber again because mine's kind of long. And Amber's is normally kind of short but with longer discussion times because hers are the screw you over. We don't know what the hell happened because police is just stupid.
Yeah. I feel like the police do a lot of cover-ups and we get stuck with the cover-ups.
I agree.
So today I'm talking about a lady named Joanna K. Oho. She was born in Dotham, Alabama. She went missing on November 20th, 1992, at the age of 19. She is from Pensacola, Florida. Or that's where she went missing from, was from Pensacola, Florida. She's classified as endangered missing. She is a white female. She was born on August the 3rd, 1973, which makes her 47 years old now. At the time of her disappearance, she was 5'7" and 140 pounds. She was wearing a white sweater, blue shorts with a lace trim, a silver necklace, and gold earrings. This Caucasian female had brown hair and brown eyes. And then she goes by the nickname Joe. Joe was last seen on November 20th, 1992. She and her roommate went to a party. However, her roommate became ill and went home. Later on that night, Joe got a ride from James Earl Gibson. Gibson told authorities that he dropped two other people home first before he dropped off Joe at the Mason DeVille apartments in the 800 block of Roy Street. She never made it home. She was never heard from again. And with no contact for Thanksgiving, her family grew increasingly worried. She was not reported missing until December the 8th. Even though she was employed, she was actively looking and even snagged an interview at the mall. James Earl Gibson was later sentenced to 35 years in prison for kidnapping and rape. He took one of Joe's acquaintances and sexually assaulted her for nearly 9 hours before releasing her. He is believed to be a serial killer. However, he is not charged in Joe's case and was paroled in July 2019.
Oh my God.
Yeah. So what do you think? What do you gather from that?
Well, there's not a lot to gather from that. But yeah. I mean, unless like all your cases, unless they have DNA evidence, well, if, honestly, even then, sometimes they don't even catch the freaking people. But I mean, unless they have actual physical proof that he did that to Joe, but it still killed me that you basically kidnapped and tortured a person, an acquaintance, someone that's attached to Joe for 9 hours.
Yeah.
And then you get paroled.
Paroled, yeah. Like
he's out free.
He sexually assaulted her, tormented her, and now he's out here on these streets that we live in.
And where was this at?
Alabama. Well, no, she was born in Alabama. This happened in Florida.
That's still all these other, you can get anywhere from Florida.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, he could be just about anywhere now.
Right now.
Yeah.
That's absolutely nuts.
Yeah. The crazy thing is, if he didn't have anything to do with it at all, how the case, his case with her acquaintance is, it really doesn't give him a good light.
Mm-mm.
It really kind of ties him in. ties him in there, especially since he was the last person to see her alive, dead, whatever.
And that's if he didn't, if there's, you know, there's always that small chance, like I said, unless there's actual physical evidence. But if he didn't do it, then he was just at a really bad, you know, time and place.
Yeah. I wonder what made him decide to torture this girl.
The mind is a problem.
It is. But that's all I got on that case. It's not really much to divulge in and get into. She's still, it's still an active missing cold case.
Right.
It's terrible. So hopefully we'll bring in light in reintroducing the name Joanna K. Oho, and maybe somebody knows something about this case and can bring something about this to justice.
Hopefully we have that few people that research these cold cases, mm-hmm. like old cases. Yeah. And I mean, these are not like ones that you see in the mainstream media right now, because I've never even heard of her.
Yeah. And
I mean, we're both down in the southern states, and a lot of times when stuff like that happens,
we know
in that close that we would know and never heard of it. So
I'm glad to bring her to light.
Yeah. My dude is sick. Like, he's sick.
I want to say all your people are sick.
So he likes to think that he's another Jeffrey Dahmer. No, I'm sorry, Ted Bundy. He wants to say that he's another Ted Bundy. And he kind of idolized him. So that just tells you what kind of person that we fixin' to talk about. I'm sorry, you guys. But so it's a lot, but I'm gonna try to condense it as much as I can. So anyway, so we have Israel Keys. I want to pronounce it Keys. It may be Kies, but I'm just going to say Keys. Anyway, so he was born January 7th, 1978 in Richmond, Utah. He's the second oldest of nine. So he has an older sister, three younger brothers, and then three younger sisters, I believe. So he was raised in the Mormon environment. And of course, in that environment, he was homeschooled. So he also occasionally went to a Christian, what did they call it? Like in one of those churches where they mainly teach white supremacy, essentially. Okay. So his family actually became friends and neighbors with who people call the future white supremacist and quote unquote family annihilator, Chevy Kehoe. So his dad and his mom were actually very good friends with Chevy Kehoe and his brother. So you can tell where this boy is fixing to be raised in. So during his early childhood, he actually began carrying around a pistol wherever he went. And we're talking about younger than like around 10 years old, carrying around a pistol. So on his 14th birthday, his grandfather thought it would be a fantastic idea to gift him a 38 caliber revolver.
Wow.
For his 14th birthday, in which he put a homemade silencer on it himself. He and a friend also had the habit of breaking into houses and burglarizing them. And also in the meantime, he was already starting to go ahead and do the serial tendencies in killing pets. So in the late 1990s, his family actually moved to Maine. And in this time, this is when he decided that he did not believe in his parents' beliefs and declared himself an atheist. And in that result, his parents kicked him out. So there's no exact date for his very first crime. Okay, so they think it's between 1996 and 1998. So the first crime was him abducting a teenage girl that was hiking along the Chutes River and then raping her and then releasing her.
Yee.
And this is according to his interview. So there's actually a 5-hour interview video that's on the FBI page.
Dang.
So in 1998, yeah, I could only get through 55 minutes of it.
I know.
In 1998, Keyes actually went to New Jersey to enlist in the U.S. Army. He was serving as a specialist in the Alpha Company, 1st Battalion, 5th Infantry, and he received an Army Achievement Medal between December of 1998 and July of 2001. He actually got an achievement for being very good, I guess, being a gunner and being an assistant gunner. So in 2001, May of 2001, he actually received a DUI charge in Thurston County, Washington, along with a state charge for driving with a suspended license. Yeah. So later in the year of 2001, he was honorably discharged from the Army. It doesn't say if it was because of medical reasons, but it was probably because of that DUI charge. But he had these achievements that...
I was going to say, like, that DUI would not be honorably.
Yeah.
But achievements could.
Yeah, so he actually did really good. So after he was discharged, so he said, or actually the investigator said, that during his discharge, that's when he decided to murder his first victims. And that's plural because they're a couple. They're unidentified. He does it completely random. He has no idea who these people are. So he just kills at random. He has like literally no heart.
No motive, nothing. Just
nope. He just wanted to kill. So during that time, he killed this unidentified couple, according to his confession that you can see in the 5-hour video. But he also ended up doing his own construction company, which actually did very well and had rave, like really good reviews. Like they actually were doing what they were supposed to do. And a lot of people trusted his company.
I mean, so I guess that's he good.
Apparently has good work ethic, but at the same time, he's a serial killer. So
hey, I mean, we all got our flaws, right?
I guess. So this is where it gets a little crazy. So on April 10th of 2009, after kidnapping and murdering a man. Don't know what the man's name is. He ended up robbing a bank to supposedly fund his crimes, is what he said. This happened in Tupper Lake, New York. So he would hop from state to state. You will see him in Alaska, New York, Florida. You will see him in Maine, in Ohio, in Oregon, in all these places. No motive at all. Just to go and kill, rob, burglarize, and do an arson, and then fly out. So here's what happened. After he had a quote-unquote murder kit, so when this murder happened in New York, after his kid, this murdering in 2009, he hid his murder kit, okay? So that way he's not traveling with it.
And he's not. I'm interested about this kid.
Like, in his kit, it has, like, all his stuff to kill, apparently. Okay.
Is it like a briefcase?
It's like a when I read it, I felt like it was a toolbox just full of, like, stuff.
Interesting.
And he dug into the ground and buried it and just, like, remembered where it's at. Like, he would put it in a specific spot where it won't come unchanged.
Wow.
Yeah. So that way when he flies out and goes to another state, comes back to that state if he wants to go murder, he can go straight back and get his murder kit and do it again. So that way he won't get caught with the stuff on him.
I mean, I guess it's smart, but it's still a lot of work.
Exactly. So at the time between April and May of 2011, he constructed another homemade silencer. Mind you, he constructed one when he was 14.
Yeah.
So he constructed another homemade silencer for a Ruger Charger pistol and decided to test it out during his next crime. So after
silencer, a potato. That's all I want to know.
After flying to Indiana and then driving over to New York. Oh, yeah, he does that. He'll fly to a state and then drive. So that way there's no trail. And he pays with everything cash. Hence why he robbed the bank.
Mm.
So there's no trail of him.
I mean, it's still trail of the money. The money's got numbers on there that can be tracked. But I digress.
Right. So he was driving to New York, and then attached his silencer. He wanted to test it out, mind you, again. So Keyes drove to Vermont after New York, where he recovered his toolbox that he buried earlier, his murder kit, to which he decided to randomly target and murder someone before going on a bank robbing and arson spree. So after selecting a location to take a victim, which he seen was like a semi-secluded farmhouse, Keyes got his weapons and then began basically watching for like the people that drive by, the motorists that drive by. He initially targeted a driver that was driving a yellow Volkswagen Beetle. Keyes found the plan to be impractical and then switched his focus on another couple that happened to be driving near. They were wandering around the suburban neighborhoods on the late hours of July 8th, 2011. He set his sights on this couple who lived on 8 Colbert Street. This couple is Bill and Lorraine Currier. The home was less than half a mile away from Handy Suites Hotel, which were which was where he was staying at. So what he did was he disabled the phone line first before breaking inside. It was what he described to the FBI people and to the investigators. He described it as a quote-unquote blitz attack. He ambushed the couriers as they slept, subduing and tying them up before taking Lorraine, Lorraine's Smith & Wesson snub-nosed 38 revolver and some other items that they had. So then Keys abducted the couple and took them to the abandoned farmhouse that he was just at, where he attempted to contact someone through their cell phones, but then he just decided not to go through with that, finding that the phones didn't have texting capabilities. So as he took Bill to a basement, Lorraine attempted to escape only to be recaptured. Then Bill tried to escape after the fact, but Keys incapitates him. And in a fit of rage, lost control over his lost his control basically, and his whole plan blew out of the window. So then he shoots him to death with the Silence 1022 Ruger charger that he had. He then sexually assaulted Lorraine and then strangled her to unconsciousness. Then took her to the basement and then strangled her again, this time killing her. He's then buried the bodies of the couple and debris and left them in the farmhouse basement, intending later to burn down the farmhouse. So he then planned to go bank robbing. I can't with this man. And then he decided that would be impractical when the old couple actually had a car that had serious mechanical issues. So he figured it would not be smart to go bank robbing in a car that probably will not get me but 3 miles down the road.
Trying to escape. At least he used his brain there.
And so he abandoned the car the next day in the parking lot of the apartment complex at 203 Pearl Street. And then during his trip back home, he went into the White National Monument Forest in New Hampshire and disposed of the items that he took from the couple. And then he put it in a suitcase and then set it on fire. He does this for too much work, honestly.
It's a lot of work.
I can see what he's trying to do so he doesn't get caught.
But you know, a lot of work.
But that's a lot. He then disposed of his tools and the revolver that he got from Lorraine in New York before returning home in Anchorage, Alaska. So he didn't know that from October 25th to October 27th, the farmhouse was actually demolished, where he killed the couple and left them there. Yeah, so the farmhouse was demolished. And the debris, including the bags that contained the couple's corpses, was transported to a local landfill. So in October or November of that same year, he purchased a police canner. This killed me. So in February 1st, 2012, he decided to kill again, driving around, of course, Anchorage. This man, I don't know. So he just picks someone completely random. So he sets his sight on an 18-year-old by the name of Samantha Koenig. So she is a barista. He approached her during a coffee kiosk and held her at gunpoint and demanded the money from the register. After the demands were met, he tied her up and then waited for her boyfriend, Dwayne Tortellini.
I thought you were going to call him that soup, tortellini.
Yeah, that's what I thought so too. intending to abduct him too, but changed his mind and dragged Koenig outside. Of course, being the smart girl, she tried to escape. But he quickly captured her and forced her into his truck and keeps her captive at his home. So then the next day, he went to Koenig's home, broke into the boyfriend's truck, because I'm not fixing to say the last name again, and stole the debit card. I had to get my charger. But the boyfriend and her father witnessed him committing the act of, you know, trying to steal the debit card. And after successfully testing out the debit card, he returned home and murdered Koenig, leaving her body in a shed on his property. And then he traveled to New Orleans, Louisiana, to embark on a cruise ship. And then and took himself a little vacation. So when he came back from the vacation, from the cruise, he became really, really worried by the large amount of publicity brought by the girl's disappearance or abduction, and decided to commit a crime spree, exploring around the west of Dallas. And that's when he encountered a 3,500 square foot, one story, red brick house in Aledo on February 16th, which he robbed before burning it in a nearby barn. He then drove to the town in Asley, where he donned with a hard hat, sunglasses, gloves, and breathing mask, robbed the National Bank of Texas within 2 minutes before escaping. He later buried the money around the Post Oak Cemetery in Glen Rose, south of Cleburne? I don't know these names. I'm sorry, you guys. He tries to then abduct a woman walking a dog, but then he quickly abandons that plan. You guys see the pattern? Then returning back to his home in Anchorage, he enacts a ransom plan for Koenig, whose death was still not known to authorities, texting a ransom note and directions to the boyfriend. He recovered and dismembered Koenig's corpse with a chainsaw, disposing all the body parts in Malanuska Lake. So then on March 26th, he actually was taken back to Anchorage, where he confessed to the murdering of Koenig. The body was actually discovered on April 1st. And during the interviews, he was very calm, very patient. It was said that he was frustrated by the rules. And that his attorneys were told to abide. He willingly gave terms to confess to any crimes he committed and pled guilty to all of the charges brought against him, as long as he was executed, and the trial took less than a year. So then investigators struck a deal with him about finding the bodies of any other potential prior victims in exchange for media, not knowing about the details that he didn't want the public to know. So as a result, authorities found and excavated the farmhouse where Keys had left the couriers, and only to find out that indications of the human, basically, they only found the decomposition of the couple, the couriers.
I'm sad my computer died. I don't know what happened.
I'll fill you in after this.
After, okay.
So not wanting to have his name released to the media, he threatened to stop speaking to investigators. On June, a routine court hearing debating on the case, calling it quote unquote complex, turned violent when he managed to escape and tried to attack spectators. I'm not laughing at what he did. I'm just laughing at like how ridiculous this, oh my God, this whole situation is so fucked up. So they think that he tried to attack spectators because he was trying to do a suicide attempt. He was subdued with a taser and taken back into custody. The following day, he stressed his perception of dishonesty from the prosecutors and that the escape attempt was unplanned and merely a reaction to stress, end quote. So, August 12, 2013, federal authorities released the new information on Keys, revealing that they suspect him to have a final death toll of 11 victims, all killed from 2001 to 2012, and that there were possibly other victims in Canada where he was known to seek out prostitutes. Additionally, he was confirmed to have burglarized 20 to 30 homes and robbed several other banks in addition to the Community Bank and National Bank of Texas. So he actually ended up committing suicide, so he's dead now. So he ended up committing suicide, but apparently, the confirmed victims were in 2011, Excess, Vermont, 2001, 2, 3, 4. So, four. No, an unnamed couple, a possible police officer, another unnamed motorist, and then the couriers, so five in 2011. And there could be more in the New York, more Anchorage, Canada, and possibly other countries as well.
There's not.
So there is actually a quote. If I can find it. So he says, quote, "There's no one who knows me or who has ever known me who knows anything about me, really. They're going to tell you something that does not line up with anything I tell you because I'm two different people, basically." End quote.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Oh, okay. You can have that.
So basically what you missed was him killing or kidnapping and killing the barista, the 18-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. He then decided he was very nervous because there was a lot of media surrounding the news of her abduction. Mm-hmm. He decided, okay, well, maybe if I commit a whole bunch of crimes, different kinds of crimes, they will forget about this and cover news of that. So he decided to rob a big bank in Texas, the National Bank of Texas, in under 2 minutes and buried the money.
Shit.
He then actually dismembered Koenig. The 18-year-old, that poor family. Like I couldn't imagine having your child missing and then find out not only are they dead, but you can't even really bury your child because some sadistic person decided to completely dismember her.
Right, yeah.
So, yes. So that's the story of Israel Keys. There's a whole bunch more, like I said. That's just a very condensed version. But there's a whole bunch more.
So that means do your research and get out there and get into this intriguing case and figure out what you think is going through his mind and let us know what you think.
Yeah, because for him to idolize Ted Bundy, you already know that's crazy. Yeah. And then for him to already have committed crimes when he was younger, that's a big, huge red flag. Yeah. For him to be killing animals, that's another huge red flag. Before he got kicked out of his house, I really want to know what his parents did. Because I'm pretty sure his parents didn't do anything about it.
Mm-mm-mm. That's that denial.
So, this actually, they claim that some of his stories actually was mentioned, or some of his crimes were actually mentioned on Criminal Minds.
I was thinking that when I was listening, I was thinking that I heard an episode or so about that.
So if you guys want to know, on season 8, episodes, I don't know what episode it is. I guess the title of it is number 6. Keys was mentioned by Reed, who mentioned the Currier murders.
And yeah, I remember that, yeah.
And when it was assumed the unsub, like Keys was a sexual sadist who targeted couples. Season 13, in the episode called Believer, Keys was mentioned by Prentice alongside by Fred West and Tony Costa as an example of serial killers who killed themselves in custody. Oh, yeah, he killed himself before he could fully be charged.
Of course. Yeah.
In season 14, called Nightlights, Keys was referenced again. Season 15, called Ghost, Keys was mentioned by Reed and Garcia when discussing how he fled to other countries until the heat from his murders cooled off in America. Hence why a lot of investigators and FBI agents believe that he killed in other countries as well. They just look, the 55 minutes of his interview, he was joking around with the investigators. Like, he was talking to them like they were his friends.
Wow.
They ask him, you know, all these questions, and he's like, you know, like, I don't want the media to think differently of me, and I don't want the media to know, like, all this stuff, because wrong information gets out there, and, you know, and then he starts joking, and, like, it got to the point where the investigators or the detectives, whoever's interviewing him, actually had to step out the room for a long time. So out of the 55 minutes that he was in that room, about 20 of it was him by himself.
Wow.
And I mean, not 20 minutes, like, straight on through. It was, they came in, talked to him, they had to leave.
I don't think I could watch that whole thing, but it does seem interesting.
While I was doing some schoolwork, because I was like, when I did his, I was like, okay, well, there's some interviews. Let me pull up one. So I pulled up one while I was doing my schoolwork. So I had it in the background playing, and I was like, is my thing still playing? And, like, I would click on the tab, and he would just be sitting there. And I was like, okay, well, that was freaky.
Freaky, just, yeah.
And sit there.
Weird, yeah.
So, yeah. But anyways, you guys, we will end the podcast here. If you guys want to let us know what you guys think of Joanna K. Oho, and Israel Keys, just comment below, email us, let us know if you guys know any other information that we may have missed. Like I said, there's a lot of mine that I tried to condense. So there's going to be a lot on him. If you guys want to see his interviews, it's in the FBI page. Just look him up. And yeah, we hope you guys have a great day, night, rest of the week. And we shall see you guys next time. Good night.
Night. We'll be right back.